certain number, say it was 30, you would get to 20 and then say, ready or not, here I come, and hope that they were ready downstairs. And so I would go downstairs. And as I went down the stairs, there was some anticipation, right? There's the anticipation of, oh, I hope I can find Randy quick, make a new record or something. There was also some fear, because as I was going down the steps, everything was eerily quiet, right? When you're playing hide and seek, people are supposed to be quiet. They're not supposed to be peep. And going to an unfinished basement, it's a little bit of a scary place, especially when that furnace gets a little bit scary. There's also some fears or thoughts that Randy would have. Randy's, you know, hiding maybe up in the roof or in a box or something. And he's speculating, okay, when is Dan going to find me? When is he actually going to find me? And maybe he won't ever find me, then I can win this round. Didn't ever happen, but the game of hide and seek, there's a lot of emotions that ring. We've been journeying through 1st and 2nd Thessalonians this summer, letters that the Apostle Paul penned to the church in Thessalonica. He wrote this letter because he had only been able to spend 3 weeks with the church there before he had to leave the city. And try as he might, he tried many times to come back to that city to continue to encourage and build up that church. He wasn't able to come. So he decided to write a letter and to give a little bit further teaching and encouragement to the church in Thessalonica. As we heard last week from Pastor Egbert, one of the things that they were wrestling with was when Jesus returns. What is it going to be like? Last week we heard about like what happens to those that have already passed on. And what's it going to, what is heaven even going to look like? And so if you want to listen to that message, you can hear it online. It was a great message last week. And this week we continue that theme of how do we prepare for the arrival. And I can only imagine they had some of the same feelings that Randy and I had when we were playing hide and seek. Apprehension, but also anticipation. They wondered when it would happen, if it would happen in their lifetime. Also a fear of what happens. And in the passage that we're going to read this morning, or that has been read this morning, and we'll journey through, there's a few things I want to pick out. And the first is that we can have different posture when we think about chapter 5, verse 1 to 5. I'm going to read it again. It says this. Now, brothers and sisters, about times and dates, we do not need to write to you. For you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night, while people are saying peace and safety. Destruction will come on them suddenly, as labor pains on a pregnant woman, and they will not escape. But you, brothers, are not in darkness, so that this day should surprise you like a thief. You are all children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or the darkness. So the first posture we can have towards this whole idea of Jesus returning is apathy. People living without caring or worrying about the end at all. You know, it's the whole don't think, don't care. And we see that in our society a lot today. People that are just like, it's not that important, or I don't know what I believe, so I don't really care. The whole you believe what you believe, and I'll believe what I believe. Right, in the scripture here, it talks about this in quotation marks, it was peace and safety. So it was kind of their saying back then of, just don't worry, we're living in safety. When we were in Costa Rica, the saying was pura vida, which means just let things go, enjoy life. You know, a little while back, it was the hang loose, right? I think Star Trekies, right? It's the live long and prosper. It's this whole idea of, yeah, don't worry about it. Live life today. Enjoy it. Don't worry about the future. Whatever come. And there's no real desire for a lot of these people to look for, right? Like we rub shoulders through the Ramp Up Sports Ministry with guys, and I've had conversations with them, and they're like, yeah, you know what? I'm okay with what I believe. It works for me. I don't really need to look deeper into it. And then there's the whole idea that Revelations 3:16 brings forth. And it's the being lukewarm, neither hot nor cold, just kind of being indifferent, apathetic. So that's the first posture that we can have as we think about Jesus' return. The second posture is apprehension, right? Living in fear. In our passage, it says, destruction will come suddenly, like labor pains on a pregnant woman. They will not escape. Or the other illustration, like a thief. I can remember when I was a little bit younger, I was still living at home. And the way that my parents' home is set up is the bedrooms are all upstairs. So one night, we had a nice sleep. It was a normal night. But when we came down, one of our prized possessions was stolen, our PlayStation, and a few other items. They were stolen as we were sleeping upstairs. We had no way of knowing that the thief was coming that night. There was no sign. There was nothing to alert us. No alert on our phones. Oh, someone's coming tonight. No, it was by surprise. And people that get their homes broken into get security systems or dogs because there's that fear. The fear that this is going to happen again. The fear that someone is coming into my fortress when I'm sleeping unaware. So we can live in this fear as we think about Jesus' return. And it seems pretty dark. We don't like, right? We have a hard time buying a new car because we're scared it's going to be a lemon, right? We don't want to put more money into a car that we just bought. Or we're scared of trying a new restaurant because, well, maybe the food's not good and we're just wasting our money on a new restaurant. Scared of making the other way, and something that I've wrestled with in the past of thinking of Jesus' return, am I sure that Jesus returning right now is a good thing for me? Because maybe I have some sins that I haven't fully figured out yet. Or there's lots of things in this world I still want to do. I don't want to miss out on those things. I don't want Jesus to return yet. And we can live in the day that... So you can live in a posture of apprehension. And the third one is 1 Timothy 1:7 says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear and timidity, but of power and love and self-discipline." We are to anticipate the day ahead when Jesus returns. Be excited if we are children of the light and of the day, as it says, we have nothing to worry about. If we're followers of Jesus, this is what we're waiting for. We're waiting for Jesus to return. We're waiting to be able to see him in all his glory. You know, we're already living in eternity right now because we have this relationship with Jesus. So really, we're just waiting for this day when Jesus returns, and we can be in his presence 24/7 without worry in his physical. This is what we're waiting for. We're supposed to be excited. We're supposed to be anticipating it. David, in the Psalm 130, verse 5, says, "I wait for the Lord. My soul waits." Our hearts should long. Laura and I have been married almost 11 years now. So in a couple of weeks, it'll be 11 years. And we've found out a lot about each other through these 11 years. And one of the things that we try to do, you know, everyone says spontaneity is awesome. You try to do something spontaneously, and it is good. You know, if I bring home flowers and I don't do it often enough, Laura's very happy. Or when she does something for me spontaneously, it's great, right? We like things, most things when they're spontaneous. But we've also found that, you know, I've tried to do something spontaneously and it didn't work. You know, I tried to plan, I wasn't going to bring this up, but I tried to plan a birthday party, and it was going to be a surprise party and do it spontaneously and showed up, and it's just not what Laura was looking for that night. We had just dropped the girls off. She was looking forward to a nice, just quiet night with me. Although we had great friends and people there, and they probably don't know this story, it's not what she was expecting. But we've also had times. We have a trip booked already in May. Flights aren't booked yet, but it's in our calendar. And this last May, we went with some amazing people and had this vacation where we left the kids at home and had an awesome vacation. And we're already anticipating that trip again, although it's in. And for us, the anticipation for a trip or for a monthly date night or something special, it gets us through the day, through the week, through the month, through the cold winter month that we are looking forward to, even though we have no idea when. But we don't just drop everything in anticipation, right? If Laura and I said, "Well, we got this trip coming up in May," and we just spent our whole time dreaming about it, really doing nothing, not feeding our kids, well, there'd be some trouble, right? There's things that we're supposed to do looking forward. And there's different ways that we can spend our time. And there's a few ways highlighted here in this passage. In verse 1 and 2, it says this: "Now, brothers and sisters, about times and dates, we do not need to write to you. For you know very well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night." Now, I kind of read this as Paul kind of saying this tongue-in-cheek. Like, okay, guys, we've told you, don't worry about the day. Like, it's going to come. Stop speculating. Because we can speculate, and people have done that through all the years on this earth about when Jesus would return, and they have all been wrong. Many people in history have tried to guess when that day is. They've all. But we can waste our time speculating this, right? There's three things that we do with speculation. Speculation is a waste of time and resources. I can't imagine the amount of discussion, the time invested, the money invested into people, into time, into projects, trying to figure out when there is absolute. The second thing, it brings needless ridicule to the gospel. All these people that have said Jesus is coming back on December 21st, 1982, or whatever it was, and they were wrong. What does that say about our Bible? What do people that don't believe in God, don't believe in the Bible, think about the Bible now? Well, it was wrong there. What else is it wrong about? And thirdly, it develops a crisis mentality. Many of you will still remember Y2K. And the whole crisis that came about of changing from 1999 to 2000, and how the computers are going to shut down and the whole economy is going to collapse. So people were buying generators and extra gasoline and stocking up on food. There was this crisis mentality. And we see that over and over through the years when someone has said, again, Jesus is returning on this day of this crisis. We don't know. We have no way. We'll never know. The second way we can spend our time is sleep, the word sleep. And you find that here in verse 6 and 7. It says, "So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be awake and sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night. And those who get drunk, get drunk." So I thought this was the most easy part of the passage to understand the first time I read it. Okay, well, you sleep in, you miss things, or you sleep through your alarm, you get to work late, you sleep, you miss out on things. But as I was reading into it more, one of the commentaries said, actually, the Greek word for sleep in this situation was kathuetos, which actually means being restless and wild. Quite different than sleeping in bed. It refers to spiritual indifference and carnality. It implies immorality and a life that seeks to live devoid. Now, for those who have entered into this relationship with Jesus, it makes sense because when we do enter into that relationship with Jesus, we become alive, right? We wake up, we see the world in a different way. And when we aren't journeying with God, there's something missing. We're asleep. We're kind of dead to our surrounding. And there's things that we do when we're in this type of sleep, right? Galatians 5:19-21 says, "The acts of the flesh are obvious: sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry and witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, and envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the..." When we are asleep, these are some of the marks in our life because we're not. So let us not spend our time. But thirdly, our passage says this: "But since we belong to the day, let us be sober by putting on faith and love as a breastplate and the hope of salvation." We need to suit up. Paul loves this illustration. I think any guy likes this illustration. There's some ladies that they'll love this too. This whole thing of being in an army, suiting up, being ready for Jesus' return, being ready for that battle cry. And we look at the two pieces of equipment that the Apostle Paul describes here. He talks about the breastplate, right? And for the Roman soldier, the breastplate went from the neck all the way down to the waist. And it covered all the major organs, protected from arrows. But when you look at it, it's not just a breastplate. It's the breastplate of love, love and faith. When we have faith and love, there's something that just brings these two together. Because if we have faith in God, then we need to have love, right? It says in 1 Corinthians 13:2, "If I have all faith so as to move mountains, but have not." And if you think about the breastplate, so the breastplate covers our insides, right? That's the faith that we have in God. But there's usually on the breastplate, there's some emblem, something where this is who I belong to, right? The army denotes who you're fighting. And so people will know by our breastplate, if you're a Roman soldier, who you are fighting for. So it's not just protecting us, but it's also allowing people to see who we are a part of, who we are. So faith and love are one. Luke 10:27 is the greatest commandment, right? It says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength." But then love. So we suit up by having faith, by showing that faith by our actions. And then the helmet, the hope of salvation. This helmet, it protects us, but really it's not just something that we like flippantly hope, right? We don't just hope that salvation. No, we're expecting, right? It's a pure hope. And when we have this hope and this love and faith, and we have the helmet and the breastplate on, it protects us from Satan, from the devil's schemes, from his planting thoughts in our minds of doubt that maybe we're not good enough. Maybe salvation won't come. Jesus will never. By suiting up, we protect ourselves from those in doubts. I read a story of Sir Ernest Shackleton. He was the captain of the Endurance in 1917. And his dream was to establish a trade route from Australia to South America via Antarctica. And I think there's an image coming up on the screen because it's hard to kind of figure out in your mind because none of us really ever want to go to Antarctica. But here it was. So the trade route was from Australia down through Antarctica to South America. And so Captain Shackleton, that his route was going to be from Antarctica to South America. And so when in 1917, him and 27 other men, so 28 men boarded the boat and went and started to try to make this trade route realist. And a few days or weeks into his trip, they actually got caught in ice. As you can think, Antarctica probably has a lot of ice. And so they got caught and the crew decided, no, we have to winter. We have to winter in this ice because we're not going to get out of this. And as they decided to do that, a few days later, they found that the ice was unstable and it was not safe for them to be there. So they took the lifeboats. They had 4 lifeboats. They took their crew and they got in these lifeboats. I'm not sure if they had to carry them for a ways. I'm assuming if they're caught in ice. And then they got to the nearest island, which was Elephant Island. As they reached this island, they found that it wasn't really suitable for them to spend the winter. There was not a lot of food available. The seals and the bears that could be there are very sparse in the winter. There wasn't vegetation to eat, very little firewood for fires. So Captain Shackleton decided, okay, I'm going to take 5 of my strongest men. We'll take our best lifeboat and we'll try to make it to South Georgia, which was 1,200 kilometers, because they knew there was an outpost there. And so as they left, they put a man by the name of Jack Wild in charge of the 22 remaining. Now, Jack had a decision to make. They could spend their time speculating, wondering when the captain will be back. They could all be looking in the horizon, waiting for his return, hoping, praying that he would. They could spend time arguing or just passing the time by playing cards or wasting the time away. But Jack decided, no, I'm going to put our guys. We're not sure how long we're going to be here, so let's make the best of the situation. So they built a shelter from the wind and the rain. They decided to forage for food, whatever they could find, to set up and make it as amicable as possible to be able to live there. But he always had one person, one man, looking at the horizon, waiting in Shackleton. So Shackleton made it to South Georgia in about 16 days. And at that point, he was trying to wrestle together a new crew to go and rescue the crew that was on Elephant Island to find a new boat. And it took him 4.5 months to get back. 4.5. The crew on Elephant Island waited for Shackleton. But as he did, and the lookout saw him on the horizon, they were ready. Yes, they made the best of the situation. And all 22 men were still alive. They were all. The question I have is, where do we put our trust? For the crew on the island, the trust and hope was in Shackleton that he would return, not knowing if he would or would. But Jeremiah 17:5-6 in the Message version says this: "Cursed is the strong one, depends on mere human, who thinks he can make it on muscle alone, sets God aside. He's like a tumbleweed on the prairie, out of touch with the good earth. He lives rootless in a land where the human race will let us down." Not always. Shackleton was able to get back, but people will let us down. It's human nature. We're imperfect. But this is what the passage says about putting trust in God. In verse 9 and 10, it says, "For God did not appoint us to suffer wrath, but to receive salvation through our Lord Jesus. He died for us so that whether we are awake or asleep, we may live together with." This is it. This is why we can live in anticipation of the day when Jesus returns. Our security is not found in humans, but in God, who will never turn his back on. He will always come through. Yes, we don't know the date and the time, but we know Jesus will return. You know, John 3:16 says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only, that whoever believes in him, the children of God, will not perish." By. This is the promise. This is the hope that we have. And this is the hope that we can expect. Psalm 46, "God is our rest, a very present help. Therefore, we will not, though the earth should change, and though the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains quake at its swelling pride, God is our." So no matter what we go through, no matter how hard life gets, we have hope, knowing we're not waiting on Elephant Island for Shackleton. We're not in hiding in a friendly game of hide and seek. This is life, eternity with or without God. And we can try to hide in the day. We can believe it won't happen in our lifetime, or hope it doesn't happen in our lifetime. So how do we share this hope with others? And verse 11, it finishes it off by saying, Therefore, everything I've said in the previous verses, encourage and build each other. Just in fact, encourage, help each other out. Give financial aid. Give physical aid. Some people just need a hug. Take time to encourage one another and build each other up. Edify. Speak well of one. Maybe restore some broken. People should know who we are by how we act. Whether it's at home, whether it's at work, with colleagues, school, or at the sports field, but other people, there's something about us that is different, and they want to know more about it. And yeah, we don't have it all together. And yeah, we have days where life sucks. And many of you guys live with this hope. I've heard stories, especially these last months, of people going through difficult times, but are living with joy. Because there's something more, something after this life, something that we're living in right now, this eternity. I read something last night in Max Lucado's daily quotes that he says, and it's this: what is the sign? Their scholarship, their willingness to go to foreign lands, their ability to amass an audience and preach, their skillful pens and hope-filled volume. The sign of the saved, their love. No fanfare, hoopla, no media coverage, just good people. For when we do good things to others, we do good. We can live with anticipation. We can share our hope with others and live our lives loving God and loving others. Let us be a church, a people ready, longing, anticipate, excited. Suit a people of and love. And place your hope and expectation, because we are made. We think of all the things that we've done in the past, still desire to give us salvation that we don't deserve. Because of that, we can thank that whatever comes up in my life, that I know that you go through the difficulty, go through the hardships, knowing that, and we celebrate those good, the mountaintop experience, knowing that you are here. And Father, as we leave this place, we'll bump into the rest of the work of our Father.